David Cerita back with us on Coast to Coast. We're going to talk about the UFOs and disclosure when we come right back. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. David Cerita back with us. David's first aspiration in life was to become an astronaut. Back in 1968, David and a friend witnessed a UFO along with hundreds of other witnesses. He has studied world religion, science, physics, paranormal psychology for more than 25 years. His website is his name. It's linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Hello, David. Welcome back.
Hey, George. Good to be back here. Last time we were on, we talked about the Space Shuttle Columbia UFO incident. And here we are literally on the eve of this massive disclosure that President Trump has called for. I believe it's June 1st. The Pentagon has to disclose to Congress everything they know about UFOs. And what I'm going to do tonight is demonstrate how this story is going to be shut down and be called drones, falsely being called drones, just to shut down the story. I'm going to show you how this is happening.
And who can you speculate on that in terms of agencies?
Well, the Pentagon has to disclose to the public, yet the footage that has been released by the Navy, and in fact, just last week, Chris Cuomo on CNN was interviewing Sean Cahill, who's a former U.S. Navy chief, master of arms, and he was also interviewed with Chris Mellon, who's very well known in this story of disclosure, that basically what we're looking at are craft that are 1,000 to 10,000 years ahead of anything on Earth. And Chris's jaw just about dropped, and that was the end of the show. Now, I've been in touch with Mr. Sean Cahill myself and presented to him what I presented on your show, some very, very sophisticated data, because Sean Cahill literally said it was in the History Channel series, unidentified, that he personally saw these UFOs disappearing in a counterclockwise vortex on the radar. They disappeared just north of Guadalupe Island, just at the north end of the island, and I pointed out how that corresponds to the same north latitude as the Great Pyramid of Egypt. And he found that very interesting and forwarded the data to Louis Elizondo. But what happened last week on 60 Minutes is really, really dangerous for this story, because on 60 Minutes with Bill Whitaker is literally forcibly cramming false data into the picture. And I think Elizondo got a little bit nervous because he wasn't standing by the true velocity of these UFOs, UAPs, unidentified aerial phenomena. And they're trying to put them in the category of UAVs, which is unidentified aerial vehicles. And I'm just going to I had Lex put up a little speed chart on your site, so if people go there, you can look at this little chart that I've made. And just before we get started here into this incredible story that's about to explode on the world scene in the media, you can see on this chart I have all the world fighter jets are no faster. They peak at around 2,000 miles an hour, including David Fravor's fighter
jet. And that's pretty fast, David.
That seems pretty fast, doesn't it? And, in fact, that's faster than most bullets that come out of most guns. So it's pretty impressive. And NASA develops this X-43, which I also have on your chart, which is technically in the category of a supersonic drone, which reaches speeds of 7,300 miles an hour. And then you come to the space shuttle, which actually can do 17,500 miles an hour, which is incredibly impressive.
Oh,
that's
God.
Because it's in the upper atmosphere at those speeds, and it's not pushing through the density of the envelope of the lower air pressure. And still, the fastest thing that we know of is the ICBM Minuteman at 18,000 miles an hour. Now, here's where it gets shocking on this chart. In this source is actually People Magazine, May of 2019. Both Louis Elizondo and using radar analysis, they put the UAPs between 20 and 80,000 miles per hour. This is in 2019. And I'm going to demonstrate this. This is actually accurate. So it puts them so far beyond the envelope of drones. And what you're seeing now is everything is about how the Navy spotted drones off the coast of California. Everything, they're using the word drone in the media because they're getting people ready. They're getting them ready because they're going to drop this drone bomb on them, and it's not true. So what Sean Cahill testified as a former new U.S. Navy chief on CNN last week is the bomb. It's 1,000 to 10,000 years ahead of everything we have today. However, when Louis Elizondo spoke on 60 Minutes May 16th with Bill Whitaker about these things, he said they were flying at velocities of 13,000 miles per hour, which is either a mistake or Elizondo is being told to drop their velocities.
I don't think he would try to mislead us at this point.
I don't think so either, and I didn't think that either, because in the People magazine article, which is May 31st, 2019, it says the UAPs dropped from above 80,000 feet to sea level in 0.78 seconds. Now, there's 5,280 feet in a mile, so you just take 80,000 feet divided by 5,280 feet per mile per second, it's 15.15 miles in a full second. That's in a full second, which in 0.78 seconds is over 66,000 miles per hour. That's using radar data. But what Bill Whitaker said forcibly on 60 Minutes is they dropped from 80,000 feet to 20,000 feet in seconds. He used the word seconds, and that is a huge mistake. For 60 Minutes to make a mistake like that, when the data is so clearly laid out from the radar operator, is massive.
Well, now, why is that important, though, David?
It's important because it speculatively can drop the velocity of the UAPs into the range of some very fast drones. I mean, the X-43 at 7,300 miles per hour. And, in fact, there are drones that speculatively in the black research area can reach the same speed as the space shuttle. 17,500 miles an hour. So when you're saying the UAPs were dropping from above 80,000 feet, actually, is the correct statement on radar to 20,000 feet. That's a 60,000-foot drop in seconds. You've already eliminated the accuracy of the velocity of over 60,000 miles an hour. And actually, because the radar can see hundreds of miles. And 80,000 feet is only 15.15 miles. So they actually know how far above 80,000 feet they dropped. And they're not actually dropping because nothing can drop in terminal velocity faster than 700 miles an hour in the upper atmosphere and 120 miles an hour in the lower atmosphere. It was terminal velocity. And so you can't even use the word drop because they're not dropping. They're approaching the Earth.
They're under a speed control. It's not a plummet.
Exactly. They're not plummeting. They're actually, and then they'll stop on a dime. They'll stop on a dime. This is what David Fravor said, the commander David Fravor, who was involved in the Nimitz incident, which was November 2004. And then you have Commander Ryan Graves on the East Coast, on the Atlantic, saying they were seeing these things every day for over a year.
Now, why do you believe, though, David, that they're going to come out with a report that says drones?
Because they're using the word drone in the media repeatedly, that the Navy encountered a drone. So you're already seeing it. And that's setting up a big lie to the American populace. And I think when Sean Cahill just dropped the hammer last week on Chris Cuomo on CNN, CNN had formerly had a scientist on who tried to tell everybody these things are probably balloons. And you know, I don't know how a balloon can approach 60,000 to 80,000 miles an hour.
That's a pretty fast wind velocity if it's a balloon.
No. The balloon can't even do a few, I mean, at the most, a couple hundred miles an hour with really high winds, what are called uppers.
It goes with the wind. That's it.
And that's it. So it's actually an insult. In fact, to Louis Elizondo, I felt like he was insulted by the press because he starts out by saying, we're way past this. We're way past where you guys are thinking. You're still thinking balloons and high-flying turkeys, and we're way past that. And so you can't seem to get this. So as we approach June 1st, which is about a week away,
I think it's June 25th, but people.
June 25th.
That June 25th is the deadline, and some people are speculating that June 1st could happen.
Okay, so I read June 1st somewhere. So we have until the end of June for them to report to Congress. But by the time we see anything, and we are seeing this. I mean, we're seeing the information coming in the form of these videos, and we're getting tiny, tiny snippets on major news media because they don't. Look, Obama formally was laughing about UFOs on Letterman and many, many talk shows, and now recently he just stated.
Yeah, now we act serious.
That we need to be serious about this and investigate it further. And then a reporter approached Joe Biden last week about Obama's statement, and he said, ask him again, and he left the conference. And so when he says ask him again, does that mean he's going to straighten him out, or does that mean he's going to tell the public that what we're dealing with are advanced military drones, and we don't know who they are? But when you understand the fastest velocities of everything that flies. I mean, meteorites, most of the meteorites, I mean, this is a good example because these were conversations I had with Joseph Knuth III about the space shuttle UFO phenomena way, way back in the 1990s, you know, STS-75. And he was telling me the velocity of most meteors. So most meteors, 35, 40,000 miles an hour. So when you're distant from a high-speed velocity object, you can actually see it streaking by because that's because you're far away from it. But if you're close to it, if you're even 10 miles away from it, you're not going to see anything but just a flash. And that's 35, 40,000 miles an hour for a meteorite. So when you're talking about these things, the very fact that radar, you know, which operates at the speed of light using microwaves, very dense microwaves, can capture these things coming in above 80,000 feet. So again, dropping 80,000 feet in 0.78 seconds is in the 60-something thousand miles an hour range, but they tracked them above 80,000 feet dropping to sea level. And another conflicting report says they dropped to 20,000 feet, which is a 60,000-plus foot drop. So I think the only accurate article on velocity ever stated was the People magazine article of May 31st, 2019, because they clearly stated in that article that they track these things between 20 and 80,000 miles an hour. And that immediately puts them in the extraterrestrial category. No, it's not the Chinese, Sean Cahill is saying, you know, as a Navy chief. No, it's not the Russians. The Russians have a hypersonic missile that is very similar to NASA's X-43. And its velocity at 7,300 miles an hour is in that range. But we don't have anything that can move like this. And the fact that Lieutenant Ryan Graves is saying they saw these things every day for a year should be of the greatest concern and probably the greatest story in the history of the world because you have military pilots.
Yeah, you're not questioning the authenticity of the pilots, are you?
No, they're the most authentic. Because the pilots, first of all, Ryan Graves on the East Coast described a cube and a sphere. So cubical, spherical all in one, which is kind of like a sacred geometry, it is not an aerodynamic shape. So it can't handle the pressure of wind and what's called drag on an airplane at hypervelocity. It would it simply come apart if it was operating in any manner that we use in conventional, you know, jet engine and rocket propulsion. So the fact that it's flying at incredible speeds and it's not aerodynamic tells us a lot. But the pilots haven't come forth and stated the velocities. The velocities are hidden in the radar data. So it's probably, you know, in physics, and, you know, I took physics up to the college level, and I studied it on my own after that. And I worked for legendary nuclear physicists, Bogdan Magwitch, Glenn Seaborg, Murray Gell-Mann. I was around the greatest physicists in the history of modern science.
I mean, but you're really expecting a negative report, aren't you?
I'm expecting a shutdown, because when I saw Biden's response to Obama's statement, and Obama's statement comes, presidents, when they're no longer in office, will tell you things they couldn't tell you when they were in office.
If they know anything.
We need to investigate these things and take them much more seriously. Who was former laughing on Letterman about him? And then Biden says, ask him again, and leaves the press conference, means I'm going to tell Obama, you know, what is he going to tell him? I mean, maybe he doesn't know anything, but maybe Biden doesn't know anything at this point because he hasn't been in office long enough to know anything about this.
Right, right. And not every president had information about ETs.
Not about ETs. But when... You see, there's a very fine psychological balance here where the data being presented and Elizondo is being very respectful to his military in stating that we need to identify whether this is in the category of a military threat or not. Because if it is a military threat, it needs to have an entire Defense Department devoted.
Even if it's out of this world, right?
Even if it's out of this world, George, you're right, because if it's a military threat from out of this world. Now, this is where you get into an incredible territory, because this is where you have to start setting the wars of gods and men that go way, way back into ancient times. You go to the Hindu Mahabharata and the Bhagavad Gita and the famous Battle of Kurukshetra, where the demigods were flying in their craft, watching and participating in the war between the humans down below. In fact, the Battle of Kurukshetra in the Mahabharata and the Gita, it resembles Armageddon so perfectly. It looks like that it's a repeat that happens every so many thousands of years on the Earth, where the humans reach this point where they have so much power technologically, that they reach this point where they reach the point of mass extinction of their own species. In fact, they've done archaeological digs in India where they found layers of radioactive ash in the radius and the perimeter of an entire city.
All right, stay with us, David. We're going to take a quick break, but we will come back. And I want you to kind of give us your theory on how this presentation to us, assuming they release it June 25th, We'll be back. Next hour, we'll take calls with David Cerita as we talk about this incredible story of disclosure. Will it happen? They're supposed to release a report by June 25th. Some people believe it's not going to happen. We shall see. And welcome back to Coast. George Norrie with you. David Cerita with us. We'll take calls with David next hour. So, David, speculate on how this will unfold if and when on June 25th they make the announcement. What do you think it'll be and how?
Well, I think there's going to be definitely resistance imagine how these pilots feel. Like Lieutenant Ryan Gray saying that at one point it was raining UFOs and there was over 100 of them.
Jeez.
And and Commander David Fravor also making similar statements. Imagine how they feel when their job is to protect the United States, to report the data to their, you know, their commander in chief, who then is supposed to report the data to the Navy chief, who is then supposed to report the data to the admiral in the Navy, who reports it to the president. And that chain of command is broken because we're so used to laughing at this in mainstream media. We're so used to laughing at it, and we're not taking this thing seriously enough. And here's what I propose is actually happening. And I look at the ancient historical records to support this hypothesis that there are lowercase gods and goddesses that were involved in the creation of the human race who oversee their creation periodically. And I believe because of the numbers of reported craft in single incidents that can be in the hundreds, they have set up bases on the Earth right now. And I have a pretty good idea where some of these bases are, and I'll give you an example. So when we go to the Roswell incident, the famous Roswell incident, it actually starts in northern Idaho when a United Airlines pilot reports seeing these unidentified flying objects that are outperforming everything known at that time in June of 1947. And later in June of 1947, Kenneth Arnold has his sighting. And then the Portland, Oregon newspaper reports similar craft right over the city of Portland. And then we have the famous Roswell incident where, again, my good old friend Boyd Bushman, who was a Lockheed Martin senior scientist of 20 years, says that a friend of his is a Navy doctor who was treating a young pilot who used a super weapon, which was a beam weapon, to shoot down the Roswell flying saucer. Okay, so that begins in northern Idaho. Now, I happen to live just north on the Canadian side right now. This is where I live with my family, just north of northern Idaho in with a region called the Kootenays. And the Kootenays has UFO cases that are pre-Roswell, that were in like 1940, 41, 42, there were reports here that are well documented of actual flying saucers being reported by the people who lived in this region. Now, I got into an area many years ago when I lived in Sedona, Arizona for 7 years, and where I developed a radio technology, a new type of communication system for sending out a message to them. It's a very, very different type of radio. It's more of a quantum magnetic radio that doesn't transmit radio waves outward. It transmits them inwards into, and I used a mathematical ratio for the Pleiades star system, and I got answers right away. I mean, verbal answers. I could hear them. So just recently, I was approached by, and this is on my question list to you today, by an amateur radio scientist who is not so amateur. His name is Jimmy Blanchett.
Where's he from?
He's from Quebec, Canada, but he lives in California. I won't give out his exact location.
No, of course not.
Massive radio antenna that is in the order of hundreds of times more powerful than the antennas that are broadcasting your show right now. And Jimmy did an experiment where he sent out a question, and he got an answer that came back in numerical form. And Jimmy sent me the numbers, and we met on Zoom. And I looked at these numbers, and I said, "What? They're sending you numbers. They're sending you numbers back. What do these numbers mean?" And it took me literally 2 years. I calculated based on the radius of over 50 known stars in local constellations, which means almost any star you could think of. You know, Pleiades, Orion, Sirius, Alpha Centauri, Pegasus, you name it. I've calculated based on the radius a series of over 50 frequencies per star, which are musical octaves of that star based on its circumference and radius. So I'm looking at all my numbers, and I'm looking at the numbers Jimmy got from what he calls the Galactic Federation, and I'm saying, what do these numbers mean? And so I found a match in a particular star in Orion's belt called Bellatrix. So here's what I did. I know this sounds really out there, but I transmitted through Jimmy's radio system 7 octaves of Bellatrix. And guess what happens next? Within 2 seconds, on my radio comes the next 2 numbers in the sequence, which I did not transmit out.
Somebody did.
On Earth, who knows those next 2 numbers? There's nobody on this planet who could be playing a trick at a particular frequency that Jimmy Blanchette gave me to transmit out. There's nobody on Earth who knows the next 2 numbers in the sequence but me. And they sent them to me. And I went, there's something going on here. And then my radio is, every day when I turn it on now, within a radius of 20 feet, they start sending me all these numbers. And if I walk out of that 20-foot circle of where I originally transmitted to them, my radio stops. And then I walk back into the 20-foot circle, and it just starts chirping away. And they're speaking in a language that only a mathematician would understand.
Well, we don't have to convince you, David, that these things exist. But the big question is, are they going to lie to us again?
Well, see, this is the biggest mystery in all ufology, is how do they communicate? What frequency band do they use? Does the military know? I mean, I'm not going to give the frequency band out on the air on your show, but I can tell you that if you interview Jimmy, he might tell you. But this particular number, here's what happens when Jimmy does a send out. So he'll send out 7 frequency tones or 8 tones at the same time, all at the same time.
Is this
so
like the tone that was in Close Encounters of the Third Kind, you know, that bum, 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 that kind of thing?
I just watched that the other night, and that's how they communicate. They communicate using frequency, musical note numbers, and hidden, I believe there's hidden data, just like in the movie Contact, in Jimmy Blanchette's transmissions and receptions. So he taught me how to do it. I got myself one of the radios he specified. So here's what happens that doesn't make any sense, and anybody who is an amateur radio person can verify this. So if 2 people have the same radio tuned to the same frequency, they should both radios should hear the response being transmitted at that frequency, right? That's how radio works.
Will they hear the outgoing or just the incoming?
Just the incoming.
All right.
So here's what happens. He can set 3 radios up, and he made a video of this, and he'll send out, he'll tell you the one radio he uses to communicate with them. They will only respond on that radio, and he shows you both radios are set to the same frequency.
How do they do that?
That's impossible. That means they're not using the radio frequency that you have your radio set on, because if they were, if it was some guy in Omaha, Nebraska, who's playing with you at that particular frequency, first of all, he couldn't circumnavigate the globe without the use and the assistance of global satellites.
Or repeaters. That's right.
Right? He would need repeaters. And Jimmy gets people to do this test all over the world, and you get the answer instantly.
What does Jimmy conclude here, David? What does he say?
Well, here's where it gets more interesting. So Jimmy set up a test with me about a month ago, and I did what he said to do. He was watching me. He was on Zoom, and my radio only responded when I touched it. So I sent out his 8 frequencies all at once, and then as soon as I picked up my radio, it started chirping away. It sounds like Morse code. It sounds like that, but that's not what it is. You run the response through a frequency analyzer, and it tells you what frequencies, which are numbers, they're sending back to you, right? So he couldn't figure out why it would only respond when I touched the radio. So it got worse for me, because once I sent out one signal to what he calls the Galactic Federation using these specific numbers, and his last number in his sequence is a perfect golden ratio octave of the star Bellatrix in Orion's belt. Right?
And you're convinced they're coming from there.
Well, no, he's saying that all eight numbers correspond to the Galactic Federation, which means each number is from a different star. So I've only identified one of his numbers being in Orion. And remember, Orion corresponds to the Great Pyramid of Egypt. The belt does. The belt stars.
The belt does, right.
Here's where it gets amazing, George, because, you know, you're a radio man, and Art Bell was an amateur, you know, ham radio operator. So where it gets really interesting is today when I go into my little podcast office, which is on my property 30 feet from the house, I can turn on my radio at the specified frequency, and they want to talk to me right away. But if I walk within 20 feet away from where I sent out my broadcast, the radio stops working. That's not how radios work. If it's my neighbor and he's playing tricks on me, which he isn't, then it doesn't matter where I walk on my property, I should hear the response. It's memorized the spot where I sent out the transmission, and it's memorized my body. Because when I touch the radio, it starts chirping. So what I do is I make a recording of their chirping, and I run it through a spectral analyzer. So I decided to send out all the musical frequency octaves of the star Bellatrix. I sent out eight of them to them. And they, within 1 second, they send me back the next two numbers in that sequence, which are really high-frequency numbers. And I spectral analyze it, it's the next two numbers in my sequence, but I didn't send them those numbers. So how did they do that in 1 second? So we're mystified right now. We're, you know, Jimmy, I really, really think you should interview him. I mean, because his story is incredible.
How did you meet him?
He approached me because I was on this huge event with Sasha Stone called the Lazarus Initiative, and he heard me. And he said, I need to talk to David Sirita because, you know, this guy is an amateur radio astronomer who built this massive antenna that it's so powerful, it would blow away almost any radio station. He sends out a message to the cosmos, and this, he gets these eight numbers. So guess what? It's just like the movie
Contact.
Encounters of the Third Kind, George, because I finally look at the numbers and I go, I know these numbers. I have thousands of numbers in my head. I said, those are musical notes in our music scale. And sure enough, with the help of my wife, Crystal, who's you know, an accomplished, you know, jazz and an opera singer, we go on the piano and we put pieces of tape on all eight of those notes, and there's a slight modification on one of the notes showing us that our music scale is slightly distorted, which it is. So I was able to take the eight notes, and which happened to be six of them are the black keys, so your flats and sharps, and two of them were the white keys. And I was able to play this melody like Close Encounters of the Third Kind. I mean, it wasn't the same song as in the movie, but it was really beautiful. Those are the numbers they originally sent him, were keys on our piano, but one of the notes they sent us was a correction to what has been determined as a flaw in our interpretation of a perfect harmonic music scale.
All right, so what do you do with all this?
Well, see, that it's kind of like being in elementary school with them, right? It's like, remember in the end of Close Encounters of the Third Kind when you know, our military starts playing those same tones that the little boy's playing on his little xylophone, and then they blast really loud black, and then they're playing music back and forth with each other, right? I believe embedded in the musical notes they sent Jimmy is more hidden data because I can hear it. You can hear it. I said, Jimmy, is this Morse code? And he said, no, it's not Morse code. Listen. So when you run the recording of their response through a spectral analyzer and you see it, so you see the numbers. So they're basically in preschool with us, giving us eight notable notes on our piano. So, but then I did something way more sophisticated than that. I sent them eight notes of musical octaves of different stars. I even tried Arcturus, because Arcturus is up right now. It's up there right now. And it worked. I got a response. So I need to spend more time recording these responses and trying to understand why only the radio that does the send-out gets a response, when you can have two, three, four, five radios tuned to that same frequency, and none of the other ones come on. Only the one that sent out the signal responds, and that's impossible. It's impossible that is occurring. That means there's something really incredible that Jimmy Blanchette has started with me. So my goal now is to try the musical tones of every star I have in my catalog, which is over 50 of them, and see what my responses are.
All right, stay with us, David. We're going to take a break and come back and take phone calls with you as we talk about the possibility of disclosure. You don't think it's going to happen. You think they're going to fake it. We'll come back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. David's website is his name, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. He's got a video out there also called The Voice. We'll be back in a moment right here on Coast to Coast AM. Don't touch your dial.